Tony Khan promised us the end of an era. That was the tagline for this pay-per-view coming into tonight, that there would be the closing of one era and the beginning of a new one. Little did we know that what he was referring to was the end of one era for one person in particular and the beginning of a new era for that same person. And that person is Adam Copeland, because Edge is officially All Elite. This has been probably the worst-kept secret in wrestling for weeks. Of course, all the speculation about Edge was really growing over the last week or two. A lot of people talking about the possibility of him going to AEW. Some people thinking, well, that's never going to happen. He'll stay in WWE. He's pretty much been a lifer in WWE. Why would he leave? Other people saying, oh, if he leaves, he's going to ruin his legacy. He's going to stain his legacy. I don't know about you, but judging by the reaction that he got at the end of that show tonight, I think his legacy is well intact. And he still has his music. But for those of you who may have missed it, indeed, Adam Copeland, who they are referring to as the Rated R Superstar, that is still going to be his nickname, because I guess the trademark that WWE had on that lapsed. So he is still the Rated R Superstar, but of course he is no longer Edge. Can't use that name anymore. So he is the Rated R Superstar. Adam Copeland is officially All Elite. There's the graphic. It's not official until you get the graphic treatment from Tony Khan. And he does, in fact, have the graphic treatment. That was quite the close to overall what was an excellent pay-per-view. One of the better pay-per-views of the entire year. Very strong show tonight. The first ever Wrestle Dream, which was conceived of as a tribute to the late Antonio Inoki. Inoki, of course, passed away 1 year ago on this date. And so Tony Khan wanted to pay homage to him. This was kind of his love letter to Inoki. And it closed with a TNT Championship match. So it's not very often that the TNT Championship has the chance to close out a pay-per-view. In fact, I can't remember the last time that happened. And the international title has been getting a lot more love over the past year than the TNT title has. Until Christian Cage got his hands on it. And ever since Christian has been walking around with that TNT title, it's been one of the best things on the entire show. Christian Cage has had this new kind of just reinvigoration of his career. And he has mastered the art of being a heel, because a lot of people, you know, they're a heel, but they want to be the cool heel, or you might be slapping hands with the fans when you come down to the ring and they're selling cool merch. Christian doesn't give a shit about any of that. Christian wants to be the most hated man in professional wrestling. He wants to have no redeemable qualities whatsoever. The guy wears a fucking turtleneck when he wrestles. What's to like about him? So he's been fantastic. He's almost 50 years old, and he has been fantastic. He's on the best run of his career. And he walks into this pay-per-view tonight as the TNT champion, defending against Darby Allin in Darby's hometown of Seattle. 2 out of 3 falls. They had an excellent main event. It was actually a very smartly worked match. Christian didn't have to do too much, and all Darby had to do was just go out there and be the same insane fucker that he always is. I don't know why Darby Allin is the way he is. I don't know how his brain works. I don't know if he'll be able to walk on his own 2 feet when he turns 40 years old. But what I do know is that these two guys went out there, they had an excellent main event, and then it built. And you had Nick Wayne out there, not in his corner, Luchasaurus in the back, Nick Wayne in the back. But Nick Wayne comes out at the end of the match, and what does he do? He turns on Darby Allin, hits him in the head with the TNT Championship. And then Christian picks up the win, he keeps the title. That wouldn't be a surprise if you pay attention to what Darby's been talking about lately, because Darby is going to go climb mountains. He's not going to be around much. He's going to Switzerland this month. He's going to China next month. He's going to be in hardcore training. So why put the TNT Championship on somebody who's going to be an absentee champion? We already have that on Friday nights. We don't need that with the TNT title. We have enough of the champions who don't show up to work. So then, of course, Tony Khan, he knows that people are expecting. People have been listening to the rumors about Edge possibly coming to AEW, right? He knows that people are talking about this. So he builds it. And I thought the way that they did the post-match was actually very, very smart. because it's not as if the lights went out and then, oh, boom, there's Edge. No. You have Darby Allin out there getting his ass kicked by Christian and Nick Wayne. Here comes Sting. Now here comes Luchasaurus. Now Sting gets overwhelmed. Oh my God, the baby faces are outnumbered. It's 3-2. What are Darby and Sting going to do? Then the lights go out. And then we get this video that comes on, which I didn't really think it was necessary, but they like to do these sorts of things. We almost got like a little vignette. And then the lights go out again, and then, of course, we hear Metalingus. And that was one of the coolest things about the way they did this debut tonight, is the fact that they were able to... And look, I mean, if Tony Khan is paying for the rights to songs like Final Countdown, and he's paying for the Rolling Stones, and he's paying for all these different songs, he could get a fucking Alter Bridge song. It's not WWE's song. So they pay for his Alter Bridge music from WWE. And so as soon as they hit the music, everybody in the building knows exactly what that means, and there he is. And so begins this new chapter of Edge's career, because there were no announcements tonight about a Max deal or about future pay-per-views or some other big announcement relative to the company. It was all about setting up the debut of Edge at the end of this show, and it could not have gone any better than it did. And there are going to be a lot of very sore WWE fans, because the tribalism is real and the tribalism is strong, and now, you know, he's dead to me now. You're going to see, I guarantee you, you're going to see that all over social media. Oh, Edge sold his soul. Oh, Edge stained his legacy. Oh, he's dead to me. Oh, go enjoy being in the minor league promotion. The fact is, Edge knows that he could go to AEW, make good money, work with his best friend, and now he's got an entire roster of other talents, not just young talent. I mean, he was shaking hands with fucking Sting at the end of the show, which, by the way, was a pretty cool visual. But he's got all of this new talent that he can work with, that he can go and have fun. And maybe he can mentor some of the younger talents. Tony Khan now has Edge and Christian on his roster. Who's to say that Edge won't go out there now and have the kind of run that Christian's been having? I've been enjoying Christian's run more than what Edge has been doing in WWE. If he can replicate that, hey, Tony Khan's got something on his hands here. Because Christian, like I said, is doing some of the best work of his entire career. So now, all of a sudden, if he's looking for someone that he could position on Collision, let's say, you know, on Saturday nights, he wants another big name that he knows wrestling fans, even fans that maybe, they only pay attention a little bit these days to wrestling, or they don't even really watch AEW, but they know who Edge is. So it's smart. If he can pick up somebody like that, there is value in bringing Edge to AEW. He is not going to wrestle matches on television every week. Christian doesn't wrestle matches on TV every week. But he's a known name off of WWE television. People know who he is. He's been around forever. He can still talk. He can still cut a hell of a promo. And he brings a lot of value to this company if Tony Khan uses him the right way. Tony Khan, the way he uses Sting, right? A lot of these legends, he's done well with as far as the way that he uses them. And so now, Edge has this whole plethora of new talent that he can work with. And Tony Khan has another big name on his roster. So I thought the way that the end of the show was done was excellent. The crowd, of course, was going fucking bonkers for it. And it was a good cap to, overall, like I said, one of the better AEW shows of the year. One of the other feature matches that was really built up a lot tonight on this show was a dream match. They called it a dream match between Bryan Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. This is a match that was supposed to happen last year at Forbidden Door. Danielson suffered a concussion. He wasn't cleared in time. The match never happened. So now here we are over a year later. We got the match tonight, and it was a masterclass in professional wrestling. This was pro wrestling. That's what this was. It was two guys going into the ring, exchanging holds and submissions and counters and reversals. There were no dives, there were no flips, there were no destroyers, there were no moonsaults. It was a straight-up wrestling match, and it was fucking great. In the end, Bryan Danielson picks up the win, but those two went out there, and they had an absolute clinic, and I will tell you that nobody was happier to be ringside watching that match than this man right here, Jon Moxley. Nobody was happier to see this match than Jon Moxley. There is no bigger Bryan Danielson fan. This is the other big takeaway of tonight. There is no bigger Danielson fan in the world than Jon Moxley. He got to sit in on commentary because he had no match. He was still getting over the concussion. He was not medically cleared, or maybe he's been cleared, but not in time to have a match. So he got to sit in for a few matches tonight on commentary. He got to sit in on the matches for the Blackpool Combat Club guys. And he was like a little kid out there. I mean, he was going a mile a minute. Nobody could get a word in edgewise. No pun intended. Nobody could get a word in edgewise with this guy on commentary. But boy, nobody was happier to be there than Mox. Another match on the show tonight coming in that I was very much looking forward to was Hangman Page and Swerve Strickland. Swerve was in his hometown. Well, he's from Tacoma, but they're in Seattle. He's got all the fans on his side. There has never been a bigger opportunity for Swerve Strickland to try to break out to that next level than tonight on this show. He's been an AEW Tag Team Champion before. Means nothing compared to this. He was in the ring tonight in a singles match against the former AEW World Champion and Hangman Page. And they had one of the best matches on the entire show. And Swerve picked up the biggest win of his AEW career. Bigger than his tag team title win. Because now, if Tony Khan takes advantage of this, and if they could position Swerve where, okay, now he can have a place higher up on the card, he could work with more people like Hangman, instead of just working with mid-card names, we may look back on this match and this win that he had tonight on this show as a turning point for him in his career. That was the significance of the match that he had tonight with Hangman Page. And again, they knocked it out of the park, I thought. Very much enjoyed that match. There were a bunch of other matches on the show, too, that I could say great things about, right? FTR and Aussie Open for the tag team titles. There was the Trios match with Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, and Kota Ibushi against the Don Callis family. There was one lone women's match. Singles women's match on the show for the TBS Championship, and that also was very good. With Chris Statlander and Julia Hart. And I will go ahead and say that I think Chris Statlander is one of the best North American wrestlers in the entire world right now. She's having a very good run, a very good string of matches, and tonight was no different in the ring with Julia Hart. There really was not a bad match on this show. However, there were 14 matches on this show. Or were there 15? I want to say 14. There were so many matches, I'm not even sure. 14 matches on this show. There did not need to be 14 matches on this show. Ricky Starks got a win tonight over Wheeler Yuta. Congratulations. He needed that win. I'm glad he got it. Didn't need to be on this show. That was a match that was should have been on Collision or a main event on Rampage or maybe even on Dynamite, but it did not need to be on this show tonight. If you would have shaved off a match on this show, it would have helped out a lot because as he got deeper into the card, not so much the main event because Darby, Seattle, right? People were going to be up for that match no matter what. There was fatigue setting in with the crowd, the deeper into the card. I think the FTR match suffered from that. So it wasn't a bad match. It just didn't necessarily need to be on this show. But we're going to go over the entire thing here from top to bottom because this is your AEW Wrestle Dream 2023
Samoa
review.
Samoa Bro.
Samoa Bro joining us. Come on in, Samoa Bro. Hey, Zachariah, thank you for the $19.99 Super Chat. So let's just start here from the pre-show. And I won't spend too much time here on the pre-show, but we'll start from the 0 hour, opening with Satoshi Kojima, Keith Lee, Ring of Honor Women's World Champion Athena. Hey, look at that. We got to see Athena. She broke out. She broke out of the basement. We actually got to see her tonight. And Billy Starks against Shane Taylor, Lee Moriarty, Mercedes Martinez, and Diamante. It's a quick opener. Went about 5 minutes. Athena got a few spots in. Ladies didn't really do much here in this match, although Athena did hit the O-face to Lee Moriarty. Keith Lee followed that with his ground zero finish, and Kojima, who loves his bread, if you follow him on social media, Kojima loves his bread. He finished things with a lariat for the win. We had Claudio Castagnoli of the Blackpool Combat Club taking on Josh Barnett. Bloodsport's own Josh Barnett. One of Antonio Inoki's star pupils, so very appropriate for him to have a spot on this show tonight. This was Barnett making his AEW debut. It was good to see him. Barnett had, I don't know, he might still, for all we know. But I know Barnett had heat years ago with the Young Bucks. Because apparently the Young Bucks did not appreciate his commentary. He used to do commentary for New Japan with Jim Ross. And the Bucks apparently did not like their commentary. They did not appreciate their commentary. They felt like they were being buried on commentary, which Barnett has denied. He said, look, you guys were heels. I was only talking about you in terms of you being heels. It was nothing personal. But apparently there was heat there. So it was good to see that that didn't stop them from using him tonight. John Moxley was on commentary for this match. And for those who don't know, again, he got concussed in his match with Rey Fénix a couple of weeks ago at Grand Slam. Was not supposed to lose the International Championship. He called an audible during the match. Fénix won the title. And that ruined plans that Tony Khan had for this show. Because Tony Khan wanted to bring a non-AEW wrestler in. And this person would have appeared on Dynamite this past week to set up a match tonight for Wrestle Dream. And that person was very likely going to be Josh Barnett. Moxley has worked Barnett before at a Bloodsport show previously. That was probably going to be the match. Jim Ross on commentary here. He was trying to get a word in with Moxley on headset, and it just was not happening. His enthusiasm, I mean, if you on a scale of 1 to 10, this guy's enthusiasm was a fucking 18, okay? And he was just so into what he was seeing, and then he would stop and cheer on Claudio like he was, you know, his manager, and he's screaming, and then he would go back to dissecting the match. And poor Nigel McGuinness and Jim Ross and Excalibur, they just couldn't get, they were overwhelmed. They were overwhelmed on headset. They did catch wrestling here in this match, and grappling, they traded submissions. Very different than most of the matches. It was very similar to the Danielson match with Sabre, which also was very different from pretty much everything else on this show. Moxley said that Barnett has been his secret weapon for many years in helping him train. He thinks Barnett feels that Claudio could be better, and that's why he accepted Claudio's open challenge that he threw out the other night and wanted to take him on here in this match. So Barnett got an overhead belly-to-belly. Claudio threw some jabs. Then came the neutralizer, and he got Barnett on the mat in an octopus hold before hooking him over in a pinning combination, and he got the pin. Moxley on commentary, he goes, the pay-per-view ain't even started yet. We got you that shit for free, which is true. After the match, Barnett, he demanded a microphone, and he got on the mic. He said, you know, I heard a lot about Claudio from his friends and his training partners. Barnett said hearing about him is one thing, but experiencing it is another. And he said, they were all right. He said, Claudio, you don't even have any idea how great you really are. And he said Inoki would be a fan of Claudio. He said he's proud of him, but he told him it's not over. And he said that he would come for Claudio again someday. Both men shook hands. Claudio had some nice words for him. This is definitely going to be a rematch in Bloodsport. No doubt about it. I'm sure the agreement is already made. They might even have a date in mind. So this was fun. I enjoyed this. We had Luchasaurus against the homeboy, Nick Wayne. Wayne got some hope spots here in his hometown, but that's all he got. The idea of Nick Wayne beating Luchasaurus is fucking ridiculous. And he did not. Now, his mom was in the crowd, and she was looking very concerned as her son was crawling for his life, begging for his life, crawling towards her. At one point, Luchasaurus chokeslammed him out of the ring onto the ring apron. Back inside, Luchasaurus missed the charge in the corner. Wayne got a big moonsault, but he also took a shot right to the back of the head, and he got pinned. So, the right person won. Like I said, it would have been fucking ridiculous for there to be any other outcome to this match. And the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn defended their AEW Trios titles against the Mighty Don't Kneel from New Japan Pro Wrestling. It was Shane Haste, Mikey Nichols, and Bad Dude Tito for the Trios titles. I won't recite the entire rap. I didn't write the whole thing down. But among the things that Max Caster talked about in his rap tonight, he rapped about tentacle porn in Japan and glory holes. So there you go. Billy hit a famouser on Bad Dude Tito. Bowens followed up with the arrival. Caster finished him off with the mic drop. I guess Bad Dude Tito is going to have to wait another year take a stab at those trios titles. You keep trying, big buddy. You keep trying. So now we get to the main card. And the main card opened. This is the second straight pay-per-view, okay, that the card opened with the AEW World Heavyweight Champion in a tag team match. Only this time it wasn't a tag team match. It was a handicap match. It was MJF defending the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles against The Righteous, Vincent and Dutch. Adam Cole is out. He broke his ankle. He's having surgery. MJF said he's going to go it alone. He doesn't want any partners. So he went alone here in this match. He came out. MJF said he was pissed off because someone stole his devil mask out of his bag last week. He denied having anything to do with that cliffhanger we saw at the end of Dynamite where that group of guys was beating up Jay White and we saw somebody in a devil mask. So he said it's not him. He told The Righteous, this is how it's going to go. He told Fat Boy, Dutch, that he's going to hit him with a body slam. And he said, white boy with the dreads, I'm going to grab you by your hipster hair and tie it in a bow, and I'm going to shove it up your partner's ass. So he called his shot. He called his shot against Samoa Joe, too. He said, I'm going to choke you out. And that's what he did at Grand Slam. He choked out Samoa Joe. Guess what? He did the same thing tonight. This is his new gimmick now. He calls his shot. He follows through. MJF did the sportsmanship spot. He screams out sportsmanship. He puts his hand out, and then, of course, thumb to the eye. The Righteous got the upper hand after that. And when MJF made a comeback, he went for a tag and then he realized that shit, I got no tag team partner. He tried for a body slam on Dutch. He collapsed though under his weight. Dutch got a boss man slam for a near fall. They each brought a chair and a wooden block, each member of the Righteous. They brought a chair and a block, I guess a 2x2, not a 2x4, into the ring. Vincent went to use the chair. Referee was distracted with Dutch. Vincent goes to use the chair, and MJF reaches up and he grabs Vincent by the balls. And he squeezes. He was like his doctor, right? I'm surprised he didn't ask him to cough. So he grabs him by the crotch, and the referee eventually does come over, and all the plunder is removed from the ring. Vincent tried for a flying senton. MJF, though, just sat up to avoid it. Eventually, he picked the big guy up. He slammed him, big pop. Then MJF fell down. When he got up, he shoved Vincent headfirst into his partner's ass. So, objective achieved. And then he took both men down with a kangaroo kick. Everybody went crazy for it. He hit the heat seeker on Dutch and got the pin with his feet on the ropes. Bryce Remsburg did not see it. He only saw MJF's legs falling after the fact. So he questioned him about it. And, of course, MJF said, no, didn't do anything. He denied the whole thing. He denied any wrongdoing. So MJF beats The Righteous just like that, 2-on-1. Straight up. Straight up. Fair and, well, not fair and square, but without any help. No tag team partner, no outside interference. He beats The Righteous. That does not say much for The Righteous that they just lost. Now, I know he's the AEW World Champion, but it's still 2-on-1. And now these two guys went in there in a handicap match. I mean, look, it's not John Cena and Randy Orton beating the entire Raw roster 17-on-2, but you look kind of impotent if you go in there in a tag team match and you lose to one guy. I'm just saying. So that didn't do them any favors. But no Roderick Strong, no Kingdom, no Jay White or Bullet Club Gold or anything like that. I thought there would be an angle of some sort. I thought maybe somebody would offer to become his partner, like Roddy, or somebody after the match was over was going to come out, but there was no. No one came out. There was no angle. It was just a straight-up match. It was a way to spotlight MJF and have him do his kangaroo kick and the body slam and send the crowd into the next match, I guess, all happy. So they were happy enough to see MJF. Now, I did talk about a potential way that AEW could work somebody into this whole MJF story and take advantage of the Adam Cole injury and heat up Wardlow. And I'm not going to get into it here, but I talked about that on the podcast today. And it's in the predictions. I put the video up already on the channel. So I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that. And would you like to see that? Would you like to see Wardlow reintroduced and try to get some momentum behind this fucking guy by getting him involved here, maybe even making him MJF's partner, and then just figuring out, okay, how do you get there? How do you get to that point where he would even want to be around MJF, and MJF would even accept him as a tag team partner? I think there's a way to do it. I think you could take a negative and turn it into a positive and try to heat Wardlow up. But again, if you guys have ideas about that, chime in on that video. Leave a comment and let me know. So after this, it was the Ring of Honor World Champion, Eddie Kingston, who was also the New Japan Strong Openweight Champion, defending both of his titles against the Ring of Honor Pure Champion. I have to say, it didn't really hit me until I just said that out loud just now. We are now two matches. I'm about to talk about the second match here on this main card, okay? But we had four matches on the pre-show. And already by this point in the show, we had the Ring of Honor World Champion / New Japan Strong Openweight Champion. We have the Ring of Honor Pure Champion, right? There's three titles in this match alone, although two of them are on the line. We have three champions in this match alone. In the previous match, we have the AEW World Champion / Ring of Honor Tag Team Champion. In the match before that, we had the AEW Trios Champions. And then, I don't even remember offhand the other matches. There may have been another title in there somewhere. This is just up to the second match of the card. There's too many titles here. I mean, it strikes me as odd that there are people, there are AEW fans who don't have a problem with this. No, what's the issue? There's no problem with that. There are too many fucking titles on this show. When every match and every person in every match has some sort of championship, there's a problem. There's too many of them. You get too many titles, it kind of waters down the whole concept of being a champion. So Eddie's two titles were on the line. Shibata's title was not on the line. This was another dream match here for Eddie. He's had a whole summer full of big moments and big matches. He's living the dream this summer. Right? He spent a month in Japan in the G1. I mean, he's having the time of his life. So Kingston, in the middle of the match, he lowers the straps. Actually, it was only maybe like a minute into the match. He lowers the straps. Shibata applied a short arm scissor. He transitioned into an ankle lock, got a grapevine, switched to a figure four. And there was a rope break from Kingston that allowed Shibata to get a bow and arrow. A little bit later on, we got some machine gun chops in the corner that dropped Shibata, who ended up making a comeback. He got his signature stalling drop kick in the corner, and he tried for some Kawada kicks. All that did was wake up Eddie Kingston. All that did was wake up the beast from within. Shibata got a Cobra twist. We saw a few of those on the show tonight. They said that was a tribute to Inoki. Shibata switched to an octopus hold, and Kingston collapsed. And he had the hold applied. It looked like he was going to fade. They said, oh, he's going out. And he got to the ropes just in time. So we got a strike battle between them. Kingston hit a spinning backfist. Shibata kicked out at one. And a Northern Lights bomb connected. Another backfist. High stack power bomb. And Kingston picks up the win. There was no chance that they were taking the Ring of Honor world title off Eddie Kingston after he just won. None. So the outcome was never in doubt, but it was still a good match. It was a fun match. I enjoyed it. After it was over, Shibata raised Kingston's hand out of respect, and Kingston signaled to play Shibata's music, and he left the ring to him all by himself. So it was an entertaining match. What's good about this, it's about time that we see Kingston, especially now that he's got two titles. It's nice to see him racking up some wins. For so long, you know, he was just eating losses. And he was okay because the people like him so much that he was able to lose and it didn't really do any damage to him. But now that he's a champion, you know, he's got to start racking up wins. They have to start booking him like a champion. So I think this was an important win for him. It'll help establish his title run. Speaking of titles, we go right from that title match to yet another title match. Chris Statlander defending the TBS Championship here on this Night of Champions pay-per-view against Julia Hart. I only now noticed as Julia was making her entrance, because Julia Hart has Brody King with her. Buddy Matthews, he's been back in Australia with Rhea Ripley. Malachi Black's been out with some minor injuries. So Brody's been managing Julia. And I don't know why it took me this long. Apparently he's been walking around like this for a while, but he has a cast on his right hand. And so the story must be true. The story going around after Wembley is that after the... because he's good friends with CM Punk. And so after the altercation between Jack Perry and CM Punk, I guess Brody was so upset by what happened that he punched a wall. And apparently he broke his hand. And I guess he wrestled later that night and he wasn't using the hand. The hand may have been wrapped. So this happened like early in the show. And I guess he's been walking around with it ever since. So this fucking guy punched a wall and broke his hand. It's just ridiculous. This was the only straight-up women's match on a show that had 14 matches on it. And these two women went out there and they crushed it. Statlander performed a deadlift German. She went up top. Julia cut her off and joined her on the ropes. And then she suplexed Statlander into the ring. Julia stood up on the ropes. She hit her picture, perfect moonsault. And at the very last second, Statlander got her foot on the bottom rope to break it up. So Julia applied her heartless submission. Statlander rolled her body weight on top of her. I thought she was going to pin her. But she rolled her body weight on top of her briefly. And then with Julia still applying the hold from her knees, from Statlander's knees, she powered up to her feet. She adjusted Julia onto her shoulders in an F5 position and then into position for a tombstone piledriver. And she hit the tombstone, held on to her, stood back up, and then hit her Sunday Night Fever finish and pinned her to retain the title. They were getting This Is Awesome chance by the end of this. This was the best Julia Hart match that I have ever seen. And she's been improving. She's been noticeably improving. But this was the best match of her career so far. And she's not even 21 years old yet. I said this on the podcast earlier today. She'll turn 21 next month. She's still very young. And she has a lot more room to get even better. But she has definitely made some noticeable improvements. And Statlander continues to make the case, I think, for best female American wrestler anywhere today. She's certainly in the conversation. If she's not number one, and she may not be, she's definitely in the conversation. She has been putting together a very impressive body of work. And, you know, between this match tonight, the Becky Lynch match with Tiffany Stratton last night at No Mercy, this was a good weekend for the ladies. Although, again, just one match here out of 14 on the show. We had the Young Bucks, the Lucha Brothers, the Guns, and the team of Orange Cassidy and Hook in a four-way match. The winners of this match would get an AEW Tag Team Championship match in the future at some point. They didn't specify when. It could be Full Gear next month. It could be Title Tuesday. They have a Tuesday taping coming up, not this week, but next week. So we don't know when, but the winners would get a tag team title shot. Let me just welcome everybody who is coming in. No, Robert. Robert in the chat wants to know, is the pay-per-view still going? He wants to know if the pay-per-view is still on. No, the pay-per-view is not on. Pay-per-view finally ended. It took long enough, but the pay-per-view did finally end. But again, thank you for joining me here tonight. Hit that like button if you are coming on in. And super chats are open as well. We're going to be reading through those in a little bit. Ray Phoenix and Nick Jackson. They started things off here to give us a preview of their international title match coming up on the four-year anniversary episode of Dynamite, which airs this Wednesday. But who knows if that is even going to be happening now. Because Ray Phoenix started this match out. Ray Phoenix wrestled all of a minute before he was clutching his shoulder. He tagged out. And then off screen, the doctor, actually multiple people, I think, were tending to Phoenix and the medical team. They took him to the back and he was never seen again. So I don't know if it was a legitimate injury or not, but there was no reason for him to have so little ring time here. If, you know, unless it was anything other than a legitimate injury. So that's not good. We actually, you know, it's funny now that I think about it, we saw something very similar on the NXT show last night. Eerily enough, in a four-way tag team match with Tony D'Angelo and Stax, they were defending the NXT tag team titles. And there was a spot in the match where he tried to pick two guys up, both, I think it was both Creed brothers at once, and his knee buckled. And immediately rolled out of the ring. He was checked on. They had to help him to the back. The only difference is, in his case, he eventually came back out. He had a brace on his knee. He made the heroic comeback, and he ended up winning the match for his team. Here, there was that. So that was the story of that match. Here, there was no story. There was no story. Again, he was in for a minute, he was out, and he was never seen again. So I don't know. I mean, we already have one cursed championship in WWE. I don't think we need another one here in AEW. Austin Gunn, this was maybe my favorite part of the match. Austin Gunn tried to pin Colton Gunn early in the match, and Paul Turner would not allow it. Now, it was actually a very clever spot, but what I like about it is they got it from someone they know, because their father used that same exact spot in a match with Road Dogg many years ago. There was a three-way tag team match. This is, again, during the Attitude Era, so this is going back years. There was a three-way tag team match, and both members of the New Age Outlaws tagged in at the exact same time. And I don't remember if it was Road Dogg laid down and let Billy pin him, or Billy laid down and let Road Dogg pin him. It was one or the other. So they both won, and they lost the match. So this was the Guns trying to implement the same strategy, but Paul Turner wouldn't let them do it. Hook fought off the Guns. He made a diving tag to Penta, who worked over both members of the Guns while everybody else was down at ringside. Penta had Colton pinned, but Austin broke it up. Hook caught Austin in Red Rum. Nick Jackson tagged in, hit a 450 splash on both men. And Nick had the pin. Orange Cassidy broke it up. And for the finish, the Bucks hit the BTE trigger on Penta, and Nick Jackson covered him for the three count. So it was an anticlimactic finish to, you know, otherwise what I thought was a very good match. We got the usual parade of big moves. I don't understand why we needed to see the Young Bucks win. Did we really need to see the Young Bucks pick up the win here in this match? I mean, I know that they probably want to go right back to FTR and the Young Bucks. And they're going to be in California. They're going to be in the Bucks' backyard for Full Gear. It's not Rancho Cucamonga, but they're going to be in fucking Inglewood for Full Gear, the next pay-per-view. And so they probably want to do FTR Bucks 4 on that show. Again, unless they want to do it on television, maybe on Title Tuesday next week. But they're probably going to save it for the pay-per-view. So I knew there was a good chance of this happening. But again, I just don't. It was just very deflating, you know, because I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay, we just got the rubber match at Wembley Stadium between FTR and the Bucks. And every time the Bucks and FTR are in the ring, they have a very good or a great match, right? So it's not like we're going to get a bad match between the two teams. But we just got the rubber match in the series at Wembley Stadium, and FTR beat them. You know, FTR won. And now here we are. And the Bucks are number one contenders for the AEW World Tag Team titles. They are the brand new Ring of Honor six-man tag team champions. And Nick Jackson is wrestling on Dynamite this Wednesday for the International Championship. I guess it pays to be elite. I guess it does. I guess it pays to be elite. That's what you call overkill, is what that is. Then we had the other third of the Ring of Honor six-man tag team champions. We had Hangman Adam Page one-on-one with Swerve Strickland. We got Hangman Sucks chance because they were in Seattle. And Swerve, he was born in Tacoma, so he had the crowd on his side. Anytime Hangman went on offense, the crowd booed. Didn't matter what he did. And you know, to his credit, he picked up on that. I'm sure he knew coming in that was probably going to be the case. And so he leaned into it, and he played heel or heelish throughout the rest of the match. Page powerbombed Swerve on the ring apron and then onto the barricade. And then he went up top. Page came off and he hit the Orihara moonsault to the floor. Page targeted Swerve's wrapped hand because if you remember at the end of their contract signing segment on Dynamite on Wednesday night, Hangman stabbed him in the hand with a pen. And so he had a wrap around his hand here during the match. Page hit a deadlift German suplex. Swerve shot right up. He hit a flatliner and a brainbuster for a near fall. Hangman got Swerve on the ropes. Swerve, though, started firing away with punches until Page was hanging from the ropes and he double stomped him. Both men fought on the ring apron. Swerve got the better of it by sending Page into the post. And Swerve went for a pile driver on the ring steps. Hangman blocked it. And he put Swerve down with a deadeye on the ring steps. Poor Swerve Strickland dropped right on his head. And the fans did not like that one bit. Hangman rolled Swerve into the ring. And he played to the crowd while he was setting up for a buckshot lariat. Page kicked Swerve through the ropes twice. But then Swerve caught the leg on the third try. And they traded shots until Page bit Swerve's hand. Page went for a buckshot, but Swerve tripped him with a drop toehold. And in the end, Swerve got him down. He got the arm, and he wrenches the arm back penta-style for the arm snap. Trainers go over to check on Hangman Page. And so now he's on the apron. Swerve goes up top, and he executes a double stomp to Page on the apron. Page rolls back inside. Swerve then hits a 450 splash for a near fall. And Swerve goes for a cross arm breaker. Page, though, got his foot on the bottom rope to break the hold. Hangman caught Swerve with a lariat and then set him up for the deadeye, but Swerve slipped out. He got an arm bar. Page escaped, and he pounded Swerve's bad hand with punches. So now Swerve, he gets a German suplex. And he went for a top rope double stomp. Hangman was able to avoid it. And Hangman finally hit Swerve with the buckshot lariat, turned him inside out. But he was selling his shoulder. He was selling his shoulder for a while, wasted too much time before going for the pin. And then Prince Nana, he reached in, he placed Swerve's foot on the bottom rope before the three count. Now, Paul Turner sees this. He ends up ejecting Prince Nana from ringside. He's not very happy about it. Page goes out to the floor, and he's yelling at Prince Nana, who ran back, you know, down to the ring. Page now turns his attention back to the ring. He goes for the buckshot, and what he does not realize, as he is preparing for the buckshot, he does not realize that when he vaults into the ring, Swerve had Nana's crown. And so he got clobbered with it. Swerve went for the pin. Hangman, though, got a shoulder up, maybe a split second too late. Referee held the count up a little bit there, but he kicked out before the count of three. Swerve then hit a pair of house call kicks, and then finally he hit the JML driver, and he pinned Hangman Page. So here in Seattle, Swerve Strickland picks up the biggest win of his career. And I understand that he was a former AEW Tag Team Champion with Keith Lee. This right here, though, is the biggest win of his career. And it was absolutely the right call for Tony Khan. This was an absolute must-win for Swerve Strickland. If he was going to be seen on the same level or have a shot at maybe moving even further up the card, it had to start here tonight in his hometown, in his home state, here on this show. These two went out there, and they killed it up to this point in the show. They had the best match of the night so far on a night of 28 matches. They had the best match on the show up to this point. And again, he pinned the AEW World Champion. And I cannot understate that enough or overstate that enough. They beat the hell out of each other. It was a stiff match, a great match. And if we actually see Swerve from this point forward working with other high-profile opponents, whoever that may be, we may eventually get Swerve and Chris Jericho. We may eventually get Swerve and Kenny Omega. That's a feud I'd like to see. Kenny Omega against Swerve Strickland. We get Swerve and Jon Moxley. Any of those types of opponents, we're going to look back on this match and we're going to look back on this win as the catalyst for that. This was the launching pad for him. This could be a turning point in his career where he goes from here to here. And for him, I hope that happens, because there's so many other opponents, so many other people for him to work with on this roster, that I would like to see him branch out a little bit here and actually work with people whose stock is higher than his. Because the only way that you get to where they are is by working with them and by beating them. So this was excellent. We had Ricky Starks one-on-one with Wheeler Yuta. Jim Ross and John Moxley, they were back again on commentary for this match. And Moxley, he claimed that he already got fined. So I guess when he went to the back, he must have made some comments on the pre-show, which airs for free. They had the pre-show on YouTube, and I don't know what other platforms it would have aired on. But he claimed that he got fined for some of the language that he used earlier when he was on commentary for the Claudio match. So he was going to watch his language, which, of course, he quickly forgot about that. They're on pay-per-view now by this point, so you can pretty much say whatever you want. At one point, he started yelling advice to Yuta, and he was dropping shit bombs while putting his hand over his mic, as if we couldn't hear him, right? So he's covering his mic, and he's going, you know, I forgot what he said, but it was basically like, you know, beat the shit out of him, or whatever it was that he was saying. And then Excalibur just kind of casually reminded him, you know, our microphones are right here too. So it's not like we can't hear what you're saying. And Moxley, I guess, didn't account for that. Big Bill walked to ringside midway into the match. Yuta got distracted by Bill, which is not hard because the guy's 7 feet tall. And Starks then rolled him up for a near fall. Starks followed with a tornado DDT for another two count. But, you know, Christian's getting a real workout here on screen all night. Since he's the $5 one, he's getting more screen time tonight than he had in the main event on this pay-per-view. This has turned into the Christian Cage show here. Starks took his elbow pad off, and he fired away with elbow strikes. Yuta caught his arm and threw some shots of his own. Starks went to the apron. He attempted a springboard move, but Yuta shoved Starks into Big Bill. Then Yuta dove out of the ring onto Big Bill, who caught him by the throat. Yuta shoved Bill into the ring post. Back inside, Yuta rolled Starks into the seatbelt, but only got a two count out of it. Starks came back with a spear and then hit the Rochambeau for the win. This felt more like a TV match than a match that belonged on this show. When you have a card, and again, there was nothing wrong with the match, and I'm very happy Ricky Starks picked up a win, but when you have a show that is as bloated as this one, okay, and 14 matches is fucking bloated, okay, even if you count four of those matches on the pre-show, fine, take those out of the equation, 10 matches. It's too much. When you have a show that's already loaded up enough as it is, you have to be able to make some cuts and say, okay, first of all, this is only going to make the show longer, but also, nobody is going to be talking about this match. Nobody is going to be remembering this match. Look at all the other matches and all the other competition on the show that these two guys had. Ricky Starks got a win. Is anybody even going to remember? This would have been better suited as a feature match on Collision than here on this show. And the crowd also, you know, the crowd was quiet for most of it. It was also, here's another aspect that didn't really help. It was heel against heel. I mean, people like Ricky, but he's a heel. Yuta, Blackpool Combat Club, heel. So I'm not sure what reaction they were really expecting here, but it didn't get much of one. But it was a much-needed win for Ricky Starks. When the match was over, he and Big Bill were looking down at John Moxley on commentary. So could be getting Moxley and Ricky Starks very soon. Then it was time for the dream match. This is what it was billed as. It was billed as a dream match. Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, one-on-one with Zack Sabre Jr. This match was supposed to happen at Forbidden Door last year. It did not happen. We got it tonight. Danielson was back to his AEW music. Tony Khan said he only had two uses. Two uses is what he paid for Final Countdown, and he got them. He might have gotten three uses out of it, now that I think about it, but he got at least two, and that's it. He's not paying whatever it was, $500,000 to have him come out to the music again. Even Tony Khan has his limits. Tony Khan had to negotiate with Alter Bridge or whoever owns their catalog. He wasn't paying for that and for Final Countdown. So he was back to his AEW music. And Brian was out there wearing Seahawks colors for his gear. Jim Ross and Jon Moxley, they stayed out there for this match on commentary. Moxley was so clearly marking out. He was so excited. He was like a little kid on commentary. And he's talking, he's dissecting, you know, strategy for what this guy is thinking and what that guy is thinking. And you can tell, legit, just listening to him, that Bryan Danielson is Jon Moxley's favorite wrestler in the world. He may be, possibly, his favorite wrestler of all time. So, and I know Jon Moxley, big fan of Onita. I mean, he's got a lot of favorites, I'm sure. But this man is his absolute favorite wrestler in the world. To the point where Nigel McGuinness at one point told him to stop and take a breath. Because this was him. I mean, look, he was getting into it. And Jim Ross, poor Jim Ross is sitting there again trying to get a word in. And I mean, at this point, Jim Ross is sound bites. That's basically what he is. So he'll get in one of his old phrases or... Jim Ross's commentary now, and I mean, here it's not his fault because, again, he couldn't even get a word in, but his commentary now I liken to a video game. So if he was going in studio and recording sound bites for a video game, that's basically what his commentary is at this point. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you ever find yourself overthinking things? Like your brain is racing with all kinds of thoughts and you just can't really focus on the task at hand? It could be about a big purchase you're about to make, like a house or a car or something involving a family member. Like, you know what you should do, but you just can't bring yourself to actually do it. Therapy can help you figure out what's holding you back and get your brain working for you, not against you. Therapy has a lot of potential benefits, and it can help you be the best version of you that you want to be. It's not just for people that have been through an emotional trauma in their lives. If you've been thinking about giving it a try, might I suggest BetterHelp? It's online, it's convenient, and it's suited to whatever your schedule may be. You don't need to worry about getting in your car and driving to an office and then sitting in a waiting room. You can do it all from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. You have nothing to lose, but so much to gain. Make your brain your friend with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. So Moxley is going on and on, and then he starts talking about Bryan Danielson reading a lot of weird tantric sex stuff. And at that point, I tried to block out his commentary for the rest of the night. Excalibur quickly tried to change the subject to Antonio Inoki and Billy Robinson. Anything but tantric sex. He did not want to get into that. He did not want to start talking about that. So yes, as he continued to fanboy here, did not take very long for Sabre to focus in on Danielson's surgically repaired right forearm. He was wrapping it up. He was twisting it. He started snapping the fingers like he was in there. He was picking this guy apart. Danielson moonsaulted out of the corner. He had a rolling single leg crab, very Lance Storm-esque. Sabre got the ropes as Danielson punted away with kicks to the left leg, followed by a disgusting dragon screw leg whip. And I have no idea how Zack Sabre was able to walk after that dragon screw. There were even people who posted a slow-mo version on Twitter, and so you can watch it slowly. And again, his ankle got caught underneath him. It just bent at a very disgusting angle. I don't know how he was able to walk after this. This guy is like fucking Gumby, but he seemed to be okay, but it looked like his ankle got crushed. Danielson hit an avalanche butterfly suplex. He fought for the same submission hold that he used to submit Okada at Forbidden Door, but Sabre would not let him get it. He got the ropes. Danielson said it's time to kick this guy's fucking head in, and Moxley said the swear could be added to his tab. Sabre avoided the Busaiku knee into a European clutch for two, and he avoided a corner charge, tried for the clutch again, but Danielson countered into cattle mutilation, and we got a wild series of counters. Both guys' legs were wrapped around each other like pretzels, and they're sitting up and they're facing each other like you would in a figure four leg lock. And so Danielson spits in his face. And Sabre slapped him. Danielson then slapped the soul out of him. And Sabre just fell backwards on the mat. Back to their feet, we got uppercuts to the arm by Sabre. Danielson kept kicking at the hamstring. Sabre hit a penalty kick to the bad arm, connected with a driver before slapping on a submission hold. Nigel McGuinness, you could see Nigel McGuinness in the background. It's like Pat McAfee out there. Pat McAfee couldn't sit. When he was doing commentary with Michael Cole, every time I would look, he was on his feet, he was on the desk, he was on his chair. Nigel is standing up in the background, and he is screaming to see Danielson submit. And then he got a rope break. That led to him calling Danielson a coward. We got yes kicks by Sabre. That led to a cross arm breaker. Danielson escaped into a regal plex and then a busaiku knee. Only got two. Danielson hit a second busaiku knee, and this time he got the win. And at that point, John Moxley just leaned back in his chair, and he said, holy shit. And honestly, what more can you say here at the end of this match? Holy shit. After the match was over, Sabre opted not to shake Danielson's hand because he's a dick, so he left, although Danielson did hug Aubrey Edwards. Aubrey Edwards, before she was a referee, she was a Daniel Bryan fan, right? That famous shot of her in the front row at Raw the night that Bryan did his retirement speech on Raw. She was the woman they zoomed in on who was crying. So here they shared a hug in the middle of the ring. She got to referee his match. This was a clinic. That's what this match was. A clinic between two technical masters. This is their style. This right here is their bread and butter. This is what they do best. And they delivered. Absolutely fantastic stuff. This right here, this is pro wrestling. And this was a match of the year candidate. Not only is this going to be a match of the year candidate, this is, I checked my list because I was smart this year. Usually I wait until the end of the year and then I'm like, fuck my life. Why did I wait until the end of the year to do this? But I've been keeping tabs. I've been keeping a list, a running list of all my match of the year candidates so far up to this point. It'll make my life a lot easier come the countdown when the year is over. And I went back with this match added to the list. This is the 7th Bryan Danielson match that I have on my list for this year. So, who do you think might end up being Wrestler of the Year this year? Could be Ospreay, but Danielson is making a hell of a case for Wrestler of the Year. 7 matches so far on my list, and we still got 3 months left. We have this entire month. We have November. We have December. So, he may pad the lead there. We'll see, but I want to go back to Nigel McGuinness for a second. Because I mentioned that Nigel was, you know, railing against Danielson. He was yelling, go ahead and submit. You're a coward. You should retire. That he was doing that throughout the entire match and, wanting him to lose. He is definitely going to be wrestling Danielson, barring injury. Because Danielson missed Wembley this year because he was hurt. And he said he wants to be on the Wembley card next year. So as long as he can stay healthy, and that's a big if at this point, we're definitely getting Danielson and Nigel McGuinness. Nigel McGuinness is coming out of retirement to wrestle Bryan Danielson at Wembley Stadium next year. There's not a doubt in my mind. Injury is the only thing that could derail that match. It's the only match that McGuinness has said he would come out of retirement for. And the fact that he's acting this way on commentary now, he's playing the long game here. I guarantee you. The early plan is to put those two guys in the ring next year at Wembley Stadium. Not a doubt in my mind. We had Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, and Kota Ibushi against the Don Callis family. Will Ospreay, Konosuke Takeshita, and Sammy Guevara. The Tron video, when they made their entrance for the Callis family, was a painting of the Last Supper with Don Callis in the middle. And then Takeshita was in there. I think Ospreay was in there, and Sammy was in there as well. Omega and Ospreay, they started things off here. Big ovation from the crowd. Tony may not have been able to put together the third match for Wembley, but at least we got it kind of tonight. We got Ospreay and Omega back in the ring. I'm sure we'll get a proper match between them at the Tokyo Dome, but we did get to see them work together tonight. Ospreay got the knees up on an Omega moonsault. He applied an abdominal stretch with help from all of his partners at one point, including Don Callis. So we had this sort of abdominal stretch chain that went from the ring to the apron to the floor, like a fucking human centipede. Aubrey Edwards caught them. She kicked the hand free. Omega, though, he stayed isolated in the heel corner. He got planted with a blue thunderbomb by Takeshita. Ibushi tagged in, and he dropped Sammy with a moonsault press. We got the Golden Lovers breaking out some of their signature offense. We got the Kitaro Crusher from Omega. Omega and Ibushi, they went and they hit stereo moonsaults, one in one corner, one in the other. Stereo moonsaults to the floor. Meanwhile, Jericho followed that with a lion salt onto Sammy for a two count. Omega hit the Terminator dive on Ospreay and Takeshita as Guevara hit a Spanish fly on Jericho for two. And then he went up top and he hit a very wild shooting star press on the floor onto Omega. This guy's legs bent, I mean, like they were jelly. I mean, I tore my ACL just watching them. But he came up okay. So there were a lot of guys on this show tonight who ended up very lucky. Adam Cole runs down to the ring, jumps off the ramp, and breaks his ankle in three places. Some of the things I saw tonight on this show, guys getting dropped on their head, guys doing a shooting star in this case and having his leg bend underneath him, the fucking dragon screw that Zack Sabre took. That's just pure luck that we didn't end up with more injuries tonight. Although when I get to the tag team title match, unfortunately, we do have an injury to talk about. But it was a rough landing, rough enough that Nigel said, we got to get a replay of that. And so they gave us a replay of the move, but unfortunately, when they did that, we missed the full screen of Sammy then springboarding into the ring and Jericho catching him into a codebreaker. Omega and Ospreay, they had another back and forth that ended in a snapdragon. Guevara flew in with a top rope cutter and got just enough to stun Omega. Ospreay hit Ibushi with a high power bomb. Jericho hulked up. The numbers, though, were too much. And that left Ibushi as the last man standing in the ring with all three heels. And we got the So his head was hung down, and then he slowly raised his head up. And I knew that look. I said, oh, that's Murder Ibushi. First time we've seen him in a long time. We got Murder Ibushi. Now, it wasn't for very long, but we did get Murder Ibushi here on this show. And he no-sold a few strikes, dropped Ospreay and Guevara. That left him and Takeshita, which originally it looked like we were going to get a singles match on this show between those two. But Ibushi is still hurt. I've been saying this for months. He admitted it to Sports Illustrated. He said he's dealing with injuries. He's not 100%. That's why he's being hidden in these multi-man matches. He's not ready to go out there and have a big feature singles match.
Thank you, and shoosh. And
because he's still hurt.
And shoosh. Thank you, and shoosh. And thank you.
Thank you, Daniel Malcolm. Thank you for the $12. Appreciate it. So we have Ibushi and we have Takeshita. Crowd was all about this. They traded lariats into a double down. Ospreay countered out of a one-winged angel attempt. Both he and Omega then fell out over the top rope to the floor. Ospreay followed that with a sky twister press on both Golden Lovers on the floor. After this, Ospreay, he took the bullet and he took the Judas effect, shoved Sammy out of the way. And while Aubrey Edwards was tending to Ospreay on the mat, Ospreay grabbed her, so she couldn't move, right? So now her attention is diverted, and she did not see that Jericho had the visual pin on Sammy after he had hit a Hurricane Rana off the top rope. Jericho then tried the Walls of Jericho. He got it applied, but Don Callis gets in the ring, and Don Callis had the baseball bat, and he takes Jericho's baseball bat, and he hits him right in the head, whacks him with the bat. Guevara then crawls over on top of Jericho, and he steals the pin as Ospreay is outside holding Omega and Ibushi to stop them from getting in and making the save. Tons of action in this match. It was excellent as expected. I mean, how could it not be? I mean, look who was involved in this match, for crying out loud. There was never any doubt that this match was not going to be excellent. And it had exactly the finish that I predicted when I did the predictions in the podcast. I said it's going to be Sammy pinning Jericho, or it's going to be Takeshita pinning Ibushi. But I thought it was going to be Sammy pinning Jericho, because Sammy is the new member of the Don Callis family. He just joined this new group, right? He's got to earn his stripes. He already lost to Jericho at Arthur Ashe. He needed this win more than Takeshita. Ospreay doesn't need it. So it was the right person going over, the right team went over in this match. And now, two rematches seem perfectly set up for Full Gear next month. We should be getting Takeshita Omega Part 2 and Jericho and Guevara Part 2. Only this time, Jericho and Guevara, they're not partners anymore. Now they're on opposing sides. So I thought this was great. Then we had FTR against Aussie Open for the AEW World Tag Team titles. This was the point in the show where I looked at the clock and I said, boy, this show's been kind of long. We still have the main event left to go, and it was after 11 o'clock. I'm thinking back to the 58-minute match that FTR had with Bullet Club Gold on Collision a few months ago, and I'm saying they're not having a 58-minute match tonight, or I'm not doing a show. I'm not doing that. I'm not all about that. But after the last two matches, it's true. The crowd was down for this. Not that they were silent the entire time, but you could tell the fatigue had set in. And with me too. And this is a recurring theme with these AEW shows. When you have this many matches, it's tough because there's going to be at least one match that's going to suffer. This was the match that suffered because look at what came before this, right? The six-man and the Danielson match. There has to be a comedown before the main event. And here it was, the FTR tag team title match. But the action was very good. FTR hit the Powerplex combo. Now, I mentioned before that there was an injury on this show, and I have not seen the update. I will check here in a second to see if there's been any updates since. But it was pretty clear that there was an injury here. They went for the Powerplex combo. Mark Davis, the bigger member of Aussie Open, who already had tape around his wrist, looks like he broke his wrist, or he injured his wrist in some way, probably broke it. I think what happened is, because I went back to check by a few seconds, and I rewatched the spot, and it looked to me like on that Powerplex combo when Cash Wheeler came down for the splash, just the way he landed, that he may have landed on the guy's wrist, and that's what did it. Because really, from that point on in the match, he was holding the wrist, he looked like he was in pain, he wasn't using the hand. He was like a one-handed man for the next 5 minutes. He finished the match. I mean, he wrestled another 5 or 6 minutes, and there was a lot going on here. You know, it wasn't like he was just sort of, I'll just try to get through. Like, yeah, it was a very active 5 minutes, but he did finish the match, but I'm pretty sure that's where it happened. Davis and Fletcher, they hit a double lariat on Wheeler, and they wanted Coriolis, but Harwood made the save, and Aussie Open, they managed to hit the Shatter Machine and Coriolis. But again, Harwood broke things up. So poor Wheeler here was about to take that spike pile driver on the apron. Dax saved him, and it was actually Davis with the bum wrist. He got spiked instead. And then while set up in the corner, Fletcher ate a super shatter machine and took the pin, and FTR retained their titles. So this was a very good match. It was not in a very attractive position on this show. I don't think that anybody on that card wants to be in that, you know, quote-unquote death spot. I mean, at least they didn't put the women there. I mean, that would have sucked for them. And they still went out there and had a very good match. I mean, these are two teams that last year, I mean, they tore it up. Remember, 1 year ago on this day at the New Japan Royal Quest show, they had one of the best matches all year in 2022. And so I don't think this was quite at that level. Davis is clearly injured. How seriously, I don't know. But when this match was over, you could see, if you looked outside the ring, you know, Doc Samson came over to tend to him. They rushed him off. They never put the camera on him, but you could see he was going down the ramp. They took him to the back. The announcers did acknowledge it. And hopefully it's nothing too serious. He just came back from an injury not that long ago. I want to say it was a knee injury. I don't think it was the wrist. I think it may have been the knee. So he just came back not that long ago. Hopefully it's nothing that's going to keep him out for a long time, but he was definitely hurt. In fact, before I get to the main event here, we're getting to the good part now. Before I get there, let me just do a quick check and see if there is any sort of medical update on Davis. And I am not seeing anything. So I am sure that soon enough we will find out what the deal is with him. But with that out of the way, let us talk about this main event. Because it was the TNT Championship. It was Christian Cage defending his newly won title. Best 2 out of 3 falls against Seattle's own Darby Allin, who was trying to become a 3-time TNT champion. He was trying to become, I think, the 4th man in AEW history to three-peat as a TNT champion. And I was trying to think, who are the other 3? Cody, right? Was it Sammy? Is Sammy a 3-time TNT champion? It might be Cody, Sammy, and I don't know who the other person would be. I'm not sure. But I like the fact that the TNT title here getting some shine in the main event. We don't get to see this. Not on pay-per-view. So this was a very unique spot for this championship to be spotlighted in. Christian entered first. Excalibur said on commentary, the champion's choice. He chose to enter first with Luchasaurus. He came out on stage with him, but then he sent Luchasaurus to the back. Darby entered with Nick Wayne. They hugged. Nick Wayne had his ribs all taped up after the match with the Dinosaur earlier, and he went to the back as well. So early in the match, oh, was it Wardlow? Okay, yeah. See, look, even I have forgotten about Wardlow. This is what I'm talking about this fucking guy. Couldn't remember. What's that guy's name? Who was that? Oh, yeah, that Wardlow guy. Unbelievable. Poor Wardlow. Sitting at home waiting for his contract to end, says Mr. Ozone. Hey, that's why I pitched the idea that I did with MJF. Get him involved. It's something for him to do. I'm just saying, there's a way to make it work. So there you go. Cody, Sammy, Wardlow, and now Darby was trying to become number 4. Christian spits in his face early on. He spit in this guy's face like he was Randy Orton in 2011. And Darby, at that point, he took him down. Not long after this, Darby pulled Christian's turtleneck over his head. This was maybe 5 minutes into the match. And then he went over for a jackknife pin, and he pinned him. So 5 minutes in, Darby Allin picks up fall number 1. In this match. And that is, as the announcers mentioned, 3 straight wins in various types of matches, tag matches. Here it was a 2 out of 3 falls match. 3rd straight win in the last few weeks for Darby Allin over Christian Cage. And in none of those matches was the title on the line. But that was his 3rd straight win. And honestly, at that point, when the announcers mentioned that Darby has his number, it's his 3rd straight win over Christian, it kind of gives, I think it's like a jinx, you know, it kind of gives away what the finish is going to be. It gives away the fact that this guy's probably not leaving with that championship. But it was Darby 1, Christian 0. There was a spot where Nick Wayne's mother, I mentioned her earlier, she was in the crowd. And Christian has made comments about Nick's mom, I've got her number, or maybe I'll call her. I know she's widowed. I tell you, this guy's the best heel in the business right now. Now that MJF has gone babyface, the best heel is Christian Cage. She's making these faces like she's coming on to Christian. She's leading him on, right? But she's like trying to seduce him. And Christian sees this. And so he walks over to his mom. And she's putting her arm around him. And like she's really laying it on thick here, you know? And then all of a sudden, she splashes a drink in Christian's face. Bobbert, with the $7 super chat, you are banned from Collision. You didn't think that was still going on, did you? You didn't think CM Punk had that power, but oh yes, he does. CM Punk has banned you from Collision. Enjoy your ban. So Christian gets splashed in the face with this drink. Darby, at that same moment, he dives out of the ring like he got shot out of a cannon. right into Christian, knocks him backwards into the barricade. Darby goes up top, and he hits a coffin drop to the floor, and Christian's back up on his feet, so he collides, knocks Christian down on the floor with a coffin drop. They get back in the ring, and Darby hits a proper coffin drop, but this time, Christian got the knees up. So Darby gets back to his feet. He's on the apron now. And Christian hits the ropes. He comes charging in. He knocks Darby off the apron. Darby goes flying off the apron, and he hits the announce desk on the way down. Because on these pay-per-views, you know, kind of like Collision, they have the announce desk at ringside, not up on stage. So Darby hits the table. Christian goes on the other side of the ring, opposite the announcers. And he starts rearranging the furniture. He starts moving the ring steps out of position, setting up for something. So now Christian ends up on the apron, on that side of the ring, okay, where the ring steps are. And he goes to suplex Darby out of the ring, and it looks like he's going to try to suplex him. He picks him up, but almost like in a falcon arrow position, and he's going to dump him on the ring steps, like right on the edge of the steps. And there's this hesitation. Christian's got him in position, and he's looking down like, he's trying to figure out, he's probably thinking like, okay, how can I do this without killing this fucking guy? Because this was a spot that Darby probably said, hey, I got a great idea. We should do this. Fucking slam me on the edge of the steps. And so Christian looked like he was having this like crisis of conscience here. Like, wait a minute, should we be doing this? And I'm not sure if this was a botch or if this was intended, but he's holding him there for so long, and then eventually he sort of just drops him, but he misses the steps, and Darby just falls on the floor. And I'm like, ew, like, what was that? So I don't know, that may have been a botch there. So Christian, he goes outside, and he picks Darby up, and he slams him anyway, right on the edge of the ring steps. So now I'm thinking, okay, he missed the steps, this was the make good on that, but they weren't done. Right, so he slams him on the edge of the ring steps. Then they end up back on the apron. And this time, Christian picks him up, and he does slam Darby, Falcon Arrow style, off the apron, right on to the steps. I'm not talking the flat part of the steps. I'm talking the fucking steps. And they show a replay of it. It's just like how he didn't break his arm or break his elbow or break his back, I will never know. That was the point where I went on Twitter and like all caps, I'm like, why is Darby Allin the way that he is? I want to know why Darby is the way that he is, because it's spots like that that I watch and I don't understand how he's still able to just function and feed himself and wipe himself and do all of these basic functions that most people are able to do for themselves. I just don't understand it. So of course, Darby is not moving. Doc Samson goes over. I'm surprised he didn't do one of these first. He goes over to Darby to go check and check for a fucking pulse and make sure he's alive. Christian's in the ring. Bryce Remsburg starts the count. There's no way that Darby is getting back up. He's not even moving. So, of course, he counts 10. Christian wins the second fall by countout. Now we're all even at one fall apiece. So now the doctor and the referee are outside. They're checking on Darby, and they call for a stretcher. While that's going on, Christian is outside the ring now, and he's going around the ring, and he's untying. I don't know if he cut it or he was just with his hands untying the ring skirt and the canvas, because it's tied down to the actual physical ring. And he's undoing all of the knots, okay? And he's untying it. He's exposing the boards is what he's trying to do. So he's exposing the plywood boards that are underneath the canvas. They load Darby onto a stretcher at ringside. I think they got him strapped down. Christian sees this. He gets back into the ring, and Christian climbs all the way up to the top rope, and he does a frog splash from the top rope onto Darby on the stretcher. So Darby now is just completely fucked. Christian brings Darby back into the ring, and it's the entire ring has not yet been exposed. It's like one corner section of the ring. You can see the boards. Okay, there's no canvas. It's just wooden boards. And on that part of the ring, on the boards, Christian hits a kill switch. And Darby goes face down onto the boards. He covers him. Darby kicks out. So now he recovers. Darby is able to sidestep a spear attempt by Christian. So he gets out of the way. But Christian locks on the Scorpion Deathlock. Sting's own move. Darby is down. He's screaming in agony. He makes it to the bottom rope from, you know, because he's locked in the Scorpion Deathlock submission. But he makes it to the ropes. Darby gets on it on Christian's back. He's able to get on his back. He's gouging at his eyes. And he hits a Scorpion Death Drop to Christian. I think I said Death Drop before. I meant Deathlock. But hits a Scorpion Death Drop. Down goes Christian. So he goes up to the top rope, and he hits the Coffin Drop. And again, this is on the boards part of the ring. Hits the Coffin Drop, covers Christian. Right across the face, too. It looked like he landed on Christian's face. He covers him. Christian kicks out at 2.5. So Darby is going to go up again. Christian crotches him on the top rope. And now he's signaling, not even really signaling, but he's kind of looking at the steps outside the ring. But instead, he gives Darby a sunset flip powerbomb onto the boards. Now Christian is setting up for the spear. He goes in for the kill. Darby moves out of the way. And Christian spears the referee. Down goes Bryce Remsburg. So now Darby comes over. Christian low blows him. There's no referee, so he can deliver the low blow. Christian goes outside the ring. He grabs the TNT title. He brings it into the ring with him. Here comes Nick Wayne. Here comes the 18-year-old Nick Wayne with his ribs all wrapped up after being beaten up by the Dinosaur on the pre-show. So he grabs the TNT title away from Christian. And now it's like, I can see what's coming. Because Christian, in the sit-down interview he did with Jim Ross and Darby on Wednesday, was talking about the fact that Nick Wayne needs a mentor. He doesn't need a painted freak hiding behind, you know, face paint. He needs a champion. He needs someone he can look up to. He needs me. He needs a father figure. Because he has no father. And so now here's Nick Wayne. Darby is standing next to him. He's saying, go for it. Hit him with it, right? He's got the belt. I'm like, all right. I can see what's coming. And of course, what does he do? He hits Darby with the title instead. Now, Darby already got beaten up by an old friend of his when A.R. Fox turned heel. A.R. Fox turned heel. He joined the Mogul Embassy. And then apparently AEW was not made aware of the fact that A.R. Fox could not travel to London because of some incident, I guess, in his past, and they were not happy. There was heat on A.R. Fox. So before Wembley, they ended up kicking him out of the Mogul Embassy, and then I guess they just turned him back babyface, and Darby just accepted him back. So now Darby has another person turning on him. Here it's Nick Wayne, who turns against him. He better keep his eyes out for Sting. You never know what Sting might do. I don't trust that fucking guy. Keep your eye on him. So Nick Wayne has turned heel in Seattle with his mom at ringside, no less. Christian pulls Bryce Remsburg over to count the fall, and Christian retains the TNT championship. This went 25 minutes. This was excellent. Well, we'll talk about the match in a second. So Christian embraces Nick Wayne after he kisses him on the head. He's giving him a hug, right? He's got a new disciple now. He is going to mold and shape this kid into his image and what he wants him to be. He's going to make sure he reaches his full potential. Nick Wayne now is in good hands. Now Nick Wayne has a father figure here in AEW. Christian picks Darby back up, and Nick Wayne starts to just lay into him. Here comes Sting. And people are obviously, they're looking at the aisle to wait and see if somebody is going to come out and help Darby. And you know that a lot of people in the crowd are aware of the rumors. And you know that a lot of people in the crowd are expecting a certain someone. Here comes Sting. No music. He's, you know, he's in his shirt and his usual gear, face paint. Here he comes down to the ring. He takes down Nick Wayne and Christian. Now Luchasaurus is back out. Sting goes after him. Nick Wayne, though, grabs Sting's leg, and now it's a 3-on-1 beatdown. Sting is down. Darby is down. Christian goes outside. He grabs two chairs. Well, that's four. Two chairs. It's late. I can't count. It's almost 2 a.m. I can't count. He grabs two chairs. He brings them into the ring. and he's setting up for a concerto on Sting, and the lights go out. Now, my only nitpick here is that I would have had the lights go out, and then you hit that music. You don't have to have any other bullshit. You just hit that music and just wait for the pop, right? But they played a little vignette first. So we got a video. And the video said, "Our feature presentation begins now." And it just showed a sports car being driven through the streets. If you look very closely on the street, it said rated R. It was very quick. I'm sure a lot of people, like in the building, didn't even notice it. But it shows this sports car arriving at the building. Man, I'm choking here. I am feeling better, by the way. Now I can't even speak. Oh, man. I'm losing my voice. Two podcasts in one day was bound to happen. But we can't have it happen now. That would be a travesty. I am feeling better, though. Somebody asked in the chat, so thank you. We don't see the person's face, but we know exactly who it is, right? The lights go back out, and then we hear, and it's not the same one from WWE. Obviously, they recorded a new one, but you hear a voice go, "You think you know me." And then we hear the Alter Bridge song, Metalingus. We hear that very familiar music, and out comes Adam Copeland. He can't be Edge anymore. But it is Edge making his AEW debut. He comes out on stage, plays to the fans. Everything that he would do in WWE, when Edge would make an entrance, he would come out, he would go to this side, he would go to that side. He was all amped up. Same exact entrance. Right down to him walking down the ramp a little bit, doing his pose, and then they shot the pyro off in the background behind him. This was his WWE entrance. From the pyro to the pose to the music, it was his entrance. The only thing that is different is the name. Because he cannot use the Edge name anymore. He can use Rated R Superstar. It looks like he's going to be Adam Copeland. Otherwise, it's exactly the same. It's like Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes took his AEW entrance with him to WWE. Only he got to keep everything. He got to keep the name, the Nightmare logo, the music, everything. So, of course, everybody in the building is going nuts. Christian is in the ring, and he has a shocked look on his face. We got a holy shit chant that broke out in the crowd. Copeland gets into the ring, and he holds out his hand. He wants the chair. Christian hands him the chair. Nick Wayne gets Sting in position for the concerto. Edge looks to the crowd. He winds up with the chair. But of course, instead of hitting Sting, he hits Nick Wayne in the back with the chair. Then he takes the chair and he throws it at Luchasaurus' head. And he hits the ropes, he comes off the ropes, and he hits the spear. Meanwhile, Christian flees, so he left the ring. And Excalibur says, "The Rated R Superstar is in AEW. Adam Copeland has arrived." He spears Nick Wayne. Cage backs up the ramp, clutching his TNT title. Copeland is staring him down from a distance. And then Copeland turns and he looks at Darby and he looks at Sting, who are now back up on their feet. Darby offers a handshake. Copeland accepts. Sting then very slowly walks up to him, like, you know, maybe he's not completely trusting him. But he puts his hand out for a handshake. Copeland shakes his hand. You can see Sting mouthing the words thank you to him. They exchange some words. And that is how they went off the air. We had Christian Cage fleeing up the ramp, looking at his former best friend, his tag team partner, his storyline brother. Can't believe what he's seeing. And in the ring, we have Edge, we have Sting, and we have Darby Allin. What a trio. What a trio that makes. Tony Khan is very good at staging things like what we saw tonight. And what I mean is, people expecting someone, but he makes you wait for it. He'll throw a little curveball, but he does give you what you want. He does give you what you're expecting. But he doesn't just give it to you right away. It reminded me in that way of All Out 2 years ago, when everybody thought they knew that Bryan Danielson was going to be debuting at the end of that show. Funny enough, it was Christian Cage in that main event that night against Kenny Omega. And then after the match, right, we got somebody came out, and who was it? It was Adam Cole. And of course, everybody was crazy for Adam Cole, but it's like, wow, what a swerve, right? Well, we got Adam Cole, and then we got Brian Danielson. We got two for one. I still look back at that show in all honesty, and that to me is like the peak. That show was excellent, but doing that, you know, they had just gotten Punk, and then to get Danielson and Cole debuting both in the same night, I think Ruby Soho debuted that night too. But that was just like a peak moment for this company. So here it was kind of similar where you think it's going to be Edge, and then Nick Wayne comes out, but then who's coming out? Oh, it's Sting. And then they give you what you're expecting. And it blew the roof off the place, and we got that great visual of the three of them in the ring together. Let me talk about the match here, because the match was excellent. You know, the match is going to be overshadowed by what happened post-match and by the debut of Edge, but the match itself, it was about 25 minutes long. It was very late, but they worked the match, I thought, perfectly. I mean, Darby, look, he takes a lot of stupid bumps. It's just what he does. And he's going to pay a price for it in his career. There's no doubt about it. If he makes it out of this Mount Everest climb, and I don't think there are people, some people, who understand how serious that is. You know, this is a guy who didn't think he needed any training for. He was ready to go into a cold turkey. He said, oh, I go 0 to 100. And they finally convinced him, like, no, you need to actually train and prepare for this. There are people who go up on that mountain and die, okay? They don't come back. So if he makes it out of that climb next year, and continues his career, who knows how long his career is going to go on for. But this is his staple. He goes out there and he takes these risks and he takes these awful, awful, just deadly bumps. It looks great and it makes you wince and it makes you wonder, you know, is he going to get up? And it's great for drama and all that. Christian, I thought, played his part perfectly and, you know, pulling up the boards. It was a great visual when they were doing moves on the exposed boards. So I thought the match was excellent, and Christian continues to just be just a phenomenal member of that roster and a phenomenal veteran for Tony Khan, a veteran presence for Tony Khan to have on that show at his disposal, and he's the best heel right now going, in my opinion. Coming into this, as far as Darby losing, it made sense knowing he's going to be away. Christian was going to win. When I found out they were headlining with the show, knowing that Darby was probably not going to win, that's when it became pretty clear to me, okay, this guy's actually coming in. Because my whole attitude was, well, I'll believe it when I see it, as far as Edge coming into AEW. When I heard that, I said, well, they're not going to end the show with this unless they have something big planned. What else could it be? What else could it be other than Edge coming in to either help Christian or cost him the championship? Funny enough, he did neither one of those things. He came in after the match was over, which, again, if you think about it, it's like, well, so wait, they had this video queued up for him, and he was just waiting in the back. What was he waiting for, you know? But that's this whole suspension of disbelief thing with pro wrestling. It's like, why in WWE or AEW, when somebody does a run-in, why do they have to wait for their music to hit, you know? Got to ask these questions sometimes. But we got a Nick Wayne heel turn. I like the idea of having Nick Wayne paired up with Christian, where Christian can mentor him or could use him as his lackey or however they're going to use him and what that relationship is going to look like. I think that's absolutely the way to go, because otherwise you have Nick Wayne, 18-year-old Nick Wayne, who debuted and is vanilla as fucking ice cream, right? This at least now will give them a chance to do something kind of interesting with him. Edge against Christian is in the works. It looks like we're going to get an Edge and Christian TNT Championship match at some point. I mean, I don't know why they would not go to it, why they would tease it tonight if they didn't have any plans to do it. We could get a trios match. It could be Edge and Sting and Darby against Christian, Luchasaurus, and Nick Wayne. Right? They could always do that before we get to the eventual Edge and Christian match. But Edge coming to AEW is going to be a very divisive topic, and I've already seen some of it tonight. You're going to have WWE fans. I think we've already had some in the chat here. You're going to have WWE fans who look at this and they think, oh, what a step down for Edge. What a terrible move this is for Edge and his career. Or Tony Khan, of course, bringing in another WWE guy. Tony Khan has wanted Edge for the last 4 years. If Tony Khan had his way, he would have had Edge in 2019. He made an offer to Edge. The only reason Edge didn't come into AEW back then is because out of loyalty to Vince McMahon, he went to Vince and said, look, I want to come back. I want to wrestle again. I got this offer to wrestle. I got this offer to also do stuff behind the scenes for this new company. But I wanted to come to you first. And it's funny how after all those years in retirement, and you know that Edge would have loved to have come back to the ring if he knew he could, 9 fucking years on the shelf after spinal fusion surgery, it takes him going to Vince McMahon and saying, oh, hey, I got this contract offer from this other company, and I'm thinking about going over there. And all of a sudden, Vince McMahon is like, you want to wrestle, pal? Sure, you'll wrestle for me. And 6 months later, he's back in the fucking ring. It's funny how that works. But all of a sudden, Edge was back in WWE, and he was wrestling again. So now Edge comes to the end of this contract with WWE, and he's worked with all of these people. He's worked with AJ Styles, and he's worked with Roman Reigns, and he's worked with Randy Orton, and he's worked with all of these different people, Damian Priest and Finn Balor, on and on and on. And Sheamus, even, in his last match on SmackDown, right? Good friend of his, someone he always wanted to work with. I don't know if he ultimately made the decision he made because it did come down to money and Tony Khan was willing to offer him what WWE was not. Maybe we'll find out exactly what it was that led to him making the decision that he did. I'm sure we'll hear from him at some point. Whether it came down to money or whether it just came down to the fact that he's almost 50 years old, he just wants to go out there and have fun. He knows that his time in the ring is very limited. He's not going to be a full-time performer, but he wants to have fun. He wants to contribute in some way. Maybe he just wants to work with Christian because the two are best friends and they haven't had the chance to work together since probably, I guess it was 2021, right? They shared that moment in the Royal Rumble, I think the year that Edge won the Rumble, the year after he came back. That would have been the last interaction we had on TV between Edge and Christian. It could just be as simple as that. But for Edge, he's going to go and do what he thinks is going to be fun and fruitful for him. And I don't fault the guy for it. If he can get a lot of money out of Tony Khan and he gets to work with his best friend and he gets a limited schedule and he can pretty much do whatever he wants and have creative freedom, what a fucking deal to get, right? That's the beauty of having two companies instead of just one. You have options. You don't have to just stay in one place. For Tony Khan, he recognizes the value that Edge brings. Edge has had some good matches since he came back to WWE, and he's also had matches that I thought were fucking boring. But washed is not a word that I would use for Edge. Edge can still go. And there is an appeal in seeing Edge and Christian together as opponents or as tag team partners. Even tonight, seeing Edge sharing a ring with Sting for the very first time. That was pretty fucking cool. As a wrestling fan, it's just a cool moment to be able to see that. And now Edge has an entire roster of people that he can work with as a babyface, as a heel. The Judgment Day is a great example of the other value that he can bring to a company. The Judgment Day was his idea. He wanted to work with Damian Priest. He wanted to help elevate Rhea Ripley. It didn't work out. They kicked him out of the group. They wanted to take the group in a direction that I think he didn't approve of, and so that was the end of that. But then, thankfully, they pivoted, and they didn't go in that supernatural direction with it. But he got booted out of the Judgment Day. But look at where the Judgment Day is today. That doesn't happen without Edge starting that group in the first place. And look at them. They're on top of the world right now in WWE. And look at Rhea Ripley and the star that she's become, and Damian Priest. There's no reason that Edge can't bring value to Tony Khan's company in ways outside of the ring that don't have anything to do with him wrestling. Whether it's as a producer, whether it's as a coach, whether it's as an announcer, you know, it could be anything. It literally could be anything. It could just be as simple as having a veteran presence and someone who can talk to people who want advice on, should I or should I not be doing this, or am I doing this wrong, or what do you think about that? Edge, right? Maybe he's a creative guy. Maybe he has ideas he wants to contribute. Maybe he can help bring some structure to certain elements backstage, right? Wouldn't that be a great thing? So I don't see this as anything but a positive for both sides. You know, there were people already comparing this and Jade Cargill. Oh, you know, they did a trade in effect where WWE got Jade Cargill, who's so much younger and she's going to be a big star for them. And Edge is, you know, washed up and he's near retirement and all that. Hey, WWE got a great star. They got a great prospect in Jade Cargill. I call prospect because she still hasn't reached her full potential yet. She's going to be a megastar. The woman's a star. That's a great signing for WWE. But I also think this could be a great signing for AEW as well. He brings star power to the show as well. People know who he is. People look at him and go, hey, that guy, you know, he's a star in WWE. He's still a big name even today. You don't think Tony Khan would love to have that on Collision on Saturdays? It's going to be interesting to see now if we see Copeland more on one show or the other, or if he's on both shows. Is he going to be a Collision guy? Is he going to be a Dynamite-only guy? I'm curious to see exactly, you know, where he ends up, what show he ends up working on more, and what his schedule is going to be. Is he going to be wrestling on a regular basis? Is he only going to be doing, you know, pay-per-view matches and maybe the occasional TV match? You know, how's his schedule going to compare to someone like Sting's? So there are still a lot of questions that have yet to be answered. You're going to see a lot of tribalist bullshit out there. Just ignore it, because these are just people. Again, it's just bizarre to me that they take it almost as like a personal affront. Like Edge has betrayed them in some way. It's like, I don't know. There are things I could say about some of these people, but it's scary. The tribalism out there is very scary. But it also kind of puts a smile on my face to see people have a meltdown. So that's always a fun aspect of it, too. When this show is over, people are saying he'll be full-time both shows via the scrum. Wow. Okay. He said he's full-time. Every week he will be on TV. Well, that just tells you why Tony Khan would love to have him in his company, because now he has a big star that's going to be on his show full-time every single week. And that doesn't mean, by the way, that he's going to be wrestling every week, because that would be ridiculous. But just having him on the show, just having his presence on the show, even if it's to cut promos, that's huge. That's huge. They lost the big name in CM Punk. CM Punk, I mean, that was the CM Punk show on Saturdays. Bryan Danielson has basically taken that show over. It's like the Bryan Danielson show now. But now Tony Khan has another arrow in his quiver. He has another bullet in the chamber. So for him, he gets a big name. It's a win-win situation for him. But that's per the media scrum, according to Tony Khan and or Edge. Edge is apparently going to be full-time. So that's huge. See, that's one less criticism that the WWE fans now can lob. Oh, he's going to be part-time. No, apparently he's going to be full-time. There you go. Let's take a look at the poll. WrestleDream, 84% thumbs up, 8% thumbs in the middle, 8% thumbs down. When was the last time we had single digits for thumbs in the middle and thumbs down? That's very impressive. This was an excellent show. This will go down as one of the best shows all year. In a year where we have had a lot of excellent shows from both companies. WWE has had a very hot year when it comes to their pay-per-views. And AEW, of course, more often than not, they always, almost always, knock it out of the park with their pay-per-views as well. But this was the very first WrestleDream. This was a very good start. If this is going to become a regular annual thing, because top to bottom, a very, very strong show. A little long, but that's sort of the story with all the AEW programs. At this point, it's like a broken record when it comes to that. At least the stuff we're getting on the shows, though, is excellent. It's one thing to have a long show with bad wrestling. There was really nothing bad on the show today, at least not on the main card. There was nothing bad on this show. Let's take a look at your super chats here. We got a whole bunch of them to go through. I want to thank all of you who are hanging out with me and are still with me here, even at 2:15 in the morning. Yes, it is very late here on the East Coast. But I appreciate you still hanging out with me. This is pretty cool. Be with me this late. We got Darius Smith with a $5 super chat. Line of the night. The pay-per-view ain't even started yet. We gave you that shit for free. That's right. We got a lot of gems from Jon Moxley tonight. Although when he started talking about the tantric sex stuff with Danielson, I drew a line. I got to draw a line in the sand somewhere. JM with the $60 super chat from 4 hours ago. I can't believe I had to mute the audio for the Dream Match. Whose bright idea was it to keep John Art Donovan Moxley on commentary during that match? I didn't hear John Moxley asking how much anybody weighed, so still not as bad as Art Donovan. Rizzo, don't know if Tony Khan had to pay for that song or if WWE did not have the rights to it, but that debut was perfect in my opinion. Well, he would have had to have licensed it no matter what. WWE doesn't own the song. So they have no ownership, they have no say in who can use the song or not unless they bought it outright, which they did not. And Tony Khan licensed it as he would any other piece of music. Justin G, by God, it's Sledge. He is here. Can Christian Cage Copeland with it? Oh, that's awful. Can Christian Cage Copeland with it? Pretty bad. Uriel, $5. Pretty good way to spend my Sunday evening. Don't get to contribute very often, but you have gotten me through a ton of late work nights, so thank you. You are very welcome, and I thank you for the support, Uriel. Thank you very much. Justin G, out, new everyone. Sledgehammer. Boy, you're really having one of those nights, aren't you, Justin? He's having one. Jazz Jackrabbit, Ledge is all elite. There's Christian again. There he is. I'm telling you, man, he's all over the place. Ledge is all elite. Edge against Christian program is going to reek of awesomeness. On a side note, AEW merch is weak. Where are the How Is Your Father turtlenecks? I don't know, but they could definitely make a killing on that. But see, here's the thing with Christian. I said, what makes him such a great heel is, I don't think he has any merch. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think there's any merch. They certainly don't push it. Because it's, you know, for him, it's not about selling merch. He doesn't want to sell merch. He doesn't want you to buy his merch. He's a heel. He doesn't like it. Big Talon 256 jumped out of my seat when Edge's music hit, one of my favorites growing up, and I can't wait to see what he does in AEW. Bow Wow, Edge came to AEW before I could. The disrespect. That's right. We never did get Bow Wow in the Jade Cargill program. Aw. How sad. I'm so sorry we never got that Bow Wow program with Jade Cargill. Paul Carpenter. By the way, Bow Wow, $1.99. I thought Bow Wow was worth more than that. Apparently Bow Wow has fallen on tough times. What happened to the fortune that Bow Wow had? Paul Carpenter, that whole feature presentation thing was stuntman Mike from the Death Proof Grindhouse movie. It did remind me of, now that you say that, it does remind me of that. It had that feel, it had that Grindhouse feel to it. Zachariah Sitchin, I'm still calling him Edge. I will not call him Adam. It doesn't sound right. It's his name. Anyways, Christian is Nick Wayne's new daddy now. Does that mean Edge will be Sting's retirement match or will it be Darby? I don't think Sting is retiring. He was supposed to retire this year. I think Sting's having too much fun making money and working a handful of times each year, so. Well, more than a handful, but he seems like he's having fun. I don't think Sting is even thinking about retirement yet. The Barf Nuggets, 24. Tonight we found out what AEW's trade compensation for Jade Cargill was. Well played. Bender McSimpson, Zack Sabre, and Danielson, Swerve, and Hangman were the best matches of the night. Love seeing Ledge make his debut. Yeah, you know, I guess I didn't mention what I thought was the best match of the night. I enjoyed the main event a lot, too. I think the top three matches for me are the main event, the Danielson match, and the Swerve match. And if I had to pick one match out of all three, man, you know, it's hard. It's hard. Those were all three great matches. I probably, though, would go with... I think I might go with the Swerve match, honestly. I think I might go with the Swerve match. Dallas, hats off to Christian for his fantastic work as a heel, his best run ever, and I'm loving every moment of it, and I understand him eyeing Nick's mom. Kel says, good show. No one wore boxing gloves. They slammed each other. They ignored the rounds. No water boy. No home runs. And not one midget. Bad show. Well, you had rounds on the NXT show last night. They had the Heritage Cup. They have rounds. Bender says, I better see Ledge Christian for a tag team run. Anis, yet another WWE legend proves money owns legacy. Abdul Rahman, I'm not trying to ruin it, but what if the men who attacked Jay White were Jose the Assistant and his guys, since Jay is feuding with Andrade? Well, that would be very lame if that were the case. Charlie Sanchez, watching AEW Scrum, and Tony Khan just confirmed Edge is going to be full-time. So, yes, we just talked about that. That's huge. That's huge, because it would be very easy for him to come in and work a very part-time schedule. Full-time does not mean wrestling all the time. It just means he'll be present on the show. But that's huge. Just having him there every week is... you know, infinitely better than only having him a handful of, if you're Tony Khan, infinitely better than having him only a handful of times each year. That also means that Tony Khan is paying him very well. If Edge is working full-time for Tony Khan, he got a sweet fucking deal. You know he got a sweet deal. Markel World. Hey, Markel, what's going on? Keep it up, he says. I hope you're doing okay. Derek Jackson. Adam Copeland is the perfect person to help in changing the locker room morale. CM Punk was too much of an explosive time bomb to be a leader. M-Sun, what if Wardlow accidentally hits MJF's car in the parking lot but doesn't have insurance, so the judge decrees he become MJF's butler? I think you've been watching too much Seinfeld. But you know what? I don't hate that idea. I actually think that's a potentially very entertaining idea. Stupid, but I think very entertaining. T. Rivera says, bet you Wardlow is saying he'll wrestle full-time too. Probably going to Tony Khan and going, I'll even work for free if you put me on TV. I want to work too. The New Movement. How long before Adam Copeland gets fired for slapping a younger talent for blatant disrespect? Silver Tower. Praise be to No Brain Shibata. Of course, how can we forget? How can we forget the classic line from the Wrestling Observer when Dave Meltzer said that they took Shibata's brain out during his surgery and put it back in? How would we ever know that were it not for Dave Meltzer? An all-time classic. That might be the best line ever written in the Observer in 40 years of the Observer. They took his brain out and they put it back in. And he's still wrestling. Very impressive. ABK with that $200 bomb from earlier. Have not been last couple of streams. Says the time difference. Ah, so it was the time difference. I figured maybe ABK overslept. I said SmackDown Friday night. I don't see him in the chat. Where's he at? Well, at least I know you're doing okay. Thank you for that bomb. I appreciate that very much. Hydrograd with the $50 Gunthar bomb. Hey, Michael Darcy, you are banned from Collision. It's still in CM Punk's contract. There's a clause in the contract. He can still ban you. And you're on the list. You and Jack Perry are banned from Collision. Hydro Grad says, was at the show tonight with a few friends, and the pop for Edge was huge. Did not think he would actually show up, but I've never been happier to have been wrong. Great show. Certainly makes up for the mediocre Collision from last. Yeah, what I saw of Collision, it was just a very basic show. Nothing special. The NXT show last night was very good. But, I mean, this show blew it out of the water. JM with $15. Thank you, JM. Plus the 60 spot from earlier. Appreciate the shout-out. Fun show tonight. Christian and Darby work great together. It's true. Honestly, Darby and almost anybody work great together. Just because he bumps his ass off. To his detriment, but he works well with the bigger guys too. When he's in the ring with like a Luchasaurus or a Big Bill or somebody like that, or when he was working with Brody King, because he just takes so much abuse. Rumplemane still going strong, checking in from I don't know where that is. Is that Maine? Is that in Maine? Is that a real town or city in Maine? We're still going strong. Hey, Rumple, thank you, man. Mikey Clayman, who is AEW's Mount Rushmore? I mean, at the moment or all time? I mean, Kenny's obviously on there. What do you think? You think Cody belongs on there? Should Cody be on AEW's Mount Rushmore? I think he probably should be. JM says Adam Cole broke his ankle. Meanwhile, Darby probably skateboarded home tonight. Bobbert with the $25. Good luck to Adam Copeland. I just hope he stays safe and does not do stunts that are too crazy. It's all right. Sting will take him under his wing. Sting will show him how it's done. Orhan. Rank as heels at their peak. Triple H, Edge, Y2J, Randy Orton. I think Triple H probably at the top, followed by Edge. Now, you know what? I'm going to say, yeah, I'd say Triple H, Edge, Orton, and then Jericho last. Daniel Malcolm, thank you for the 12. Orhan says, better overall wrestler for me, John Cena or Brock Lesnar? Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar is just a freak athlete. From the moment he debuted until present day. Cena's had a lot of great matches, so has Brock. So Brock Lesnar is, I mean, when you think of a pro wrestler, Brock Lesnar is everything you would want in a professional wrestler. He looks like a Viking. He just looks like a scary dude. He's got scary speed. He can work. I mean, we see him suplex everybody. We know there's a wrestler buried in there somewhere. He knows he doesn't have to do that shit anymore, so he doesn't do it. But he can work his ass off. He can bump his ass off. He can talk. For years, he didn't talk. We know he can talk. The answer is Brock Lesnar. Wapatapa, Adam Copeland back in SWAC. Robert, if CM Punk was still in AEW, he would have welcomed Adam Copeland and then banned him from Collision. Probably right. M. Mills, thank you for that 1992. I hope you're doing okay. Paul Carpenter, my question is Edge 100% done with WWE? I grew up on him in his debut. I knew he was a star. It feels like Hogan going to WCW. Sting against Edge is a dream match. Yeah, I mean, look, this is a guy who spent his entire professional career from the moment he got his first big break. He went to WWE. And that was, what, 90? Well, he debuted on television in 98. Probably got there in 97. But he debuted in 98. Now, I know he had the 9 years off, but he was still technically with WWE. So you're talking a period of over 20 years. You know, he was like a lifer in that company. So it feels a little strange now to see him on another show, especially with his same music and everything. But, you know, hey, look what Hogan going to WCW ultimately led to, right? I'm not saying that's what's going to happen here, but sometimes people go somewhere else and it just reinvigorates them. It's like a baseball player being traded from one city to the next. You know, and then all of a sudden they start playing better. Sometimes a change of scenery can do wonders for someone. Or they can fill holes in that team where they may be lacking someone or lacking a certain kind of player. They can fill that role. Edge can be that person for Tony Khan. The Moldy Cheeseburger. The Moldy Cheeseburger says, I can't wait for Vince Russo and AEW, bro. Creative control, bro. Thank you, Moldy Cheeseburger. That sounds awful. Michael Darcy, I guess we can expect a big debut every time Christian main events a pay-per-view. You know what? That's a very valid point. That's a very valid point. Something big happens when Christian headlines a pay-per-view. The Moldy Cheeseburger, again, says, I can't wait for Wardlow's new gimmick. Bum-ass Wardlow. Poor guy. Got his ponytail cut, too. They took everything away from him. They took his title away from him. They took his job. They took his passport. That's why he couldn't fly overseas for the Canadian tour. They took his man bun away from him. Now he has nothing. And Derek Jackson, finally, we've reached the end of the line here. Derek Jackson, why does Nick Wayne remind me of Colin Delaney? I don't know, but he reminds me of Colin Delaney too. He's very lanky. He's very slender. He's small. If a gust of wind comes by, it would blow him over, just like Colin Delaney. So they're similar in that one. Samoan fan. With the $2, wants to know who owns the tape library for Lucha Underground. I guess that would be, is El Rey Network still a thing? Or maybe Robert Rodriguez? I think Robert Rodriguez and his company, his production company might own it. They're the ones who produced it. So I assume it falls under his ownership. But thank you guys for the super chats. Very much appreciated. Some great questions in there. The goal tonight for Be the Booker was 500, and we are over 600. And I know we could do even better than that, so make sure you hit that like button. But we did smash the goal, so let's go ahead. I did update this the other day. It is an updated, amended version of Be the Booker. So let's go ahead and book some matches.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
We'll try to zip right through this because it is almost 3 o'clock in the morning here on the East Coast. All you fuckers out west, it's only 12:30 in the morning. But no, I'm sorry, it's 11:30. What am I talking about? It's 11:30 at night where you are. Damn it. All right, here we go. We'll start out with the men. Men's Be the Booker. I don't think I can book a card as strong as Wrestle Dream, but I'm going to give it the old college try. We begin with Double J, Jeff Jarrett. I feel like I've already failed. Jeff Jarrett in our main event. One-on-one with Dax Harwood. You know, it's not a terrible match. I mean, Dax and Jarrett. He feels like an old school veteran kind of guy. Jarrett is. Yeah, you know what? I'll give that the belt. Two guys who know how to work a good match. Maybe not a main event. But I'm feeling generous. I think it would be a good match. So we'll give that the belt. Now, over on the ladies' side, we begin with, why are we doing this? Why? I hit the button quickly, too, because I thought, all right, we'll just hit it real quick, right? Like rapid fire. And we still land on fucking Brie Bella. We just landed on her last week. Why does she keep coming up? She's only in here once. Why do we keep landing on Brie Bella? I don't understand. Let's finish this out, though. Let's see who her opponent is going to be. We're not done with her yet. Brie Bella is going to take on Carmella. Okay. Changes nothing. Changes absolutely nothing. So we're not going to get the hat trick tonight like we did last night. Or Friday night. But we could still end up 2-1, right? 2 up, 1 down. We could still do well here. There's still hope. We begin with the Steiner brothers. There we go. Former WWF Tag Team Champions. Look at those titles. Real title belts right there. The Steiner brothers. Going to be taking on the Killer Bees. That's a damn good wrestling match. If you never saw the Killer Bees, they were a very good tag team in the WWF in the mid-80s. A lot of matches with the Hart Foundation, Dream Team. They're from that time period. Steiners and Killer Bees in their prime would have been a hell of a tag team match. That's tag team wrestling done right. But we did almost 2.5 hours on the podcast earlier today. If you missed episode 828, it went up a little later than I wanted it to. Definitely go check it out on your Monday. Listen to it at the gym. Listen to it at home, in the car, while you're making love to your wife. I'm sure she won't mind you listening to my voice over hers. My voice probably sounds better anyway. But go ahead and listen to the podcast. And I'm going to be live with you again later today, Monday night. We have Monday Night Raw, the final Raw before Fastlane. And then I'm going to be live on Wednesday after Dynamite, which now becomes a very big episode of Dynamite, obviously. And then Friday night, live after SmackDown. Friday is my birthday, so I'm going to be spending my birthday on Friday with all of you. I hope you will join me. We'll have a little party here on the street. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm not looking forward to being a year older, but I am looking forward to hanging out with you on the streams this week. And then we do it all over again next Saturday because we have another pay-per-view. We have Fastlane next Saturday. So, busy, busy week coming up. Be well. Stay safe. Hit that like button on your way out. Consider becoming a channel member. Those of you that I lost since the month just started, if you want to renew, you can go ahead and do that. And I'll see you back here for the Raw stream tomorrow night. Until then, take care, guys. Thank you again.